Chapter 9 of his novel Finale opens with this exchange. "This has given us a lot of ideas for hours," said a smiling Ronald Reagan to an unsmiling Rosalind Carter, as the incumbent president concluded a quick tour of his predecessor's new library. "Yes," agreed Nancy, who was thinking, "ideas for what not to do. All these kitsch displays, the Peanut Brigade banner from 76, the kids' letters, 'Please stop people from killing the whales,' and worse, Carter's replies to them, signed Jimmy." "Good," said Rosalind, without adding any words or warmth. The two presidential couples filed out into the sunshine toward the speaker's platform as the Fort McPherson Army Band played Hail to the Chief. Nancy looked over the four circular pavilions that had just been constructed on this hillside and thought they looked like a monotonous World's Fair. Still, as much as she tried, it was hard for her to dislike the Carters themselves. No matter how prudish and pickle-pushed the two of them might be, there was no getting away from how much they had done for her and Ronnie, first by defeating the Fords, whom she had no trouble at all disliking, and then, once in the White House, by screwing up so badly they seemed to have spent their whole 4 years rolling out a red carpet for the Reagans. Someone on Mike Deaver's staff used to refer to the 39th president as the mastermind, insisting that Jimmy Carter was the greatest Republican strategist of all times. Those words from the novel Finale, a novel of the Reagan years by Thomas Mallon, issued by Penguin Random House. Yes, the situation concerns presidential business, presidential libraries, and all that, but it's a scene that says so much about Nancy Reagan, and Rosalind Carter, too, and by extension, Ronnie and Jimmy. It's that combination of the public and personal that characterizes the work of award-winning writer Thomas Mallon. Thomas Mallon is a novelist and essayist and teacher who has written 10 books of fiction, including the forthcoming Landfall, a novel on the George W. Bush administration from 2001 through 2009. His 10 books of fiction include Watergate, a finalist for the Penn Faulkner Award, and he has also written volumes of nonfiction about plagiarism, diaries, letters, and the Kennedy assassination. His work also appears in The New Yorker, The New York Times Book Review, and other publications. He received his doctorate in English and American Literature from Harvard University, and he taught for a number of years at Vassar College. His honors include Guggenheim and Rockefeller Fellowships, the National Book Critics Circle Citation for Reviewing, and the Harold D. Vercel Memorial Award of the American Academy of Arts and Letters for Distinguished Prose Style. A professor emeritus of English at George Washington University, Dr. Mallon has been literary editor of the Gentleman's Quarterly and deputy chairperson of the National Endowment for the Humanities. In 2012, he was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. The University Honors Program and the Soika Fund for Humanities at Misericordia University in Dallas, Pennsylvania, will sponsor an event titled A Novelist's Washington, Thomas Mallon on Politics and the Novel, tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock in the Catherine Evans McGowan Room of the Mary Kintz Bevavino Library. We had a chance to speak by phone with Thomas Mallon about his work and about his writing of historical fiction.
Books I've written about politics, I mean, they're historical fiction. This new one is scarcely historical fiction because it's only set about a dozen years ago. But, you know, I've set books in the 50s. I've set books during the Nixon years, the Reagan years. And these were times that were well past by the time I was writing about them. And I've even gone way further back to the 1870s and the Civil War. And historical fiction, when it involves politics, there are, I think, a number of different kinds of it. One person who did as much to make political historical fiction prominent in our time was Gore Vidal. And Gore Vidal's novels like Burr, Lincoln, 1876, they reached a very wide popular audience, and they were very entertaining. But Gore's books, and I call him Gore because I knew him a bit. I was one of his editors when I worked at GQ. His books were, I think, somewhat different from what I'm trying to do in that Gore was a highly politicized person, and his books all had a sort of thesis that the United States was a kind of wayward, blundering empire, that we were a republic that had lost our way by becoming a kind of imperial force in the larger world, which was not what the founders and their immediate descendants wanted for the United States. I would not say that my books work any particular political thesis. I'm interested in the comedy of politics. I'm interested in the terrible things it does to people, the compromises. It's a terrible life, I think, for a lot of the people who wind up living it. I'm mostly interested in telling a story and mostly interested in showing what I'd call, for lack of a better term, the human side of politics. There's a term or phrase, a kind of a slogan that I never liked much at all, nor did my late Washington friend Christopher Hitchens, and that's that slogan, the personal is political, which, you know, tries to convince you that every action you take during the day has political ramifications. I would say that this book, or these books of mine, more than anything, they try to demonstrate the opposite, that the political is personal, that people's personal foibles, their psychological compulsions, their needs, and so forth, all of those private things about their personality often wind up dominating their public conduct, often wind up making them make certain decisions to do things politically. And, you know, I don't write alternate history, which is, you know, those books that actually reverse the outcome of events, you know, those novels where the South wins the Civil War or something like that. My books stick surprisingly much to the facts, but what I try to do is insert in between what might have been private goings-on, private conversations, things that could have happened plausibly that we don't know about. And those events are almost always the personal lives of actual political figures. And then, in addition to that, I throw into the mix some invented characters, as you would have in any novel, made-up characters.
You're going to be reading, they tell us, for the very first time aloud in public, from Landfall. Tell us what goes on there.
Landfall is the last volume in a trilogy. I didn't know I was writing a trilogy until my editor told me so when I was writing this third novel in it. But it's a trilogy now, I guess. And the first volume was Watergate, which was, of course, set during the Nixon scandals. The second volume was called Finale, which was set during the Reagan years. It's a little odd to be having a trilogy where the middle volume is called Finale, but that's how it's turned out. And then this last volume is called Landfall, and it's set during the middle of George W. Bush's presidency. It's set between 2005 and 2007. At the very beginning of the book, he's starting his second term in 2005, and then quickly getting mired down in the Iraq insurgency, which reaches its worst points in many ways in 2005 and 2006. Just as the administration is trying to get elections going in Iraq and trying to get a democracy up on its feet in Iraq, the country there is falling into a kind of civil war. And the other disaster, of course, from that period is Hurricane Katrina, where the administration's response is seen as being so inadequate, which really dealt a body blow to President Bush's popularity. And so the book, like the ones before it, it's really about, I realize I've written these three books about Republican presidents who are at the lowest points in their fortunes. They're mired in scandal or international difficulty or whatever. And what I just try to do is suggest what it might have been like to be on the inside of that and what its larger effects seem to be on the country. And the book is full of people really on both sides, a lot of people trying to do their best, but just caught up in overwhelming circumstances where there's no good alternative, there's no good solution to something. I mean, I can be as cynical as anybody about politics, and there are some characters in the books who are really not out for anybody but themselves. But this one has a lot of people who are groping, trying to find the right thing to do, and simply overwhelmed.
What do you make of these times?
It's a terrible terrible time right now. It really is. And so bad, I mean, I was joking with my editor in New York about this book, and I said, you know, how are we going to sell a book about George W. Bush? I said, even people who liked George W. Bush, who voted for him, don't necessarily want to relive this period. It was a rough period, Iraq, Katrina, and so forth. And he joked with me a few months ago saying, you know, we're going to sell this book, Nostalgia, because I think compared to the level of venom right now and just the sheer ugliness of everything, the Bush years look better than people thought of them at the time. There was a sense that they were about something, that there were big issues that people were struggling to deal with, whereas now the ugliness is so personal, it's so daily, and it's so extreme that for the first time in my life, I'm turned off by politics. I mean, I liked politics from the time I was a kid. My first big political memory was the Kennedy-Nixon election of 1960, and, you know, was an avid student of politics ever since. But, you know, I frequently get asked by people, well, you're going to write a novel about this administration. And in fact, I sort of posed that question to myself in an essay I did for The New Yorker a couple of years ago, and really, I have no appetite for it. My sense about the current period is I just want to survive it. I don't want to chronicle it.
And what about your interest in the characters who are not George Bush and not Richard Nixon? You have a fascination for those supporting roles.
Yes. I mean, there are two fictional characters, entirely made-up characters in this book, who are basically bureaucrats, one of them working in one of the arts endowments, the other working on the National Security Council. And a lot of what goes on in the book is told through their eyes. But minor characters or minor players in political events have always been a real interest of mine. One of my early novels was a book called Henry and Clara, which was about the couple who were in the box at Ford's Theater with President and Mrs. Lincoln on the night of the assassination, and all of the astonishing and awful things that happened to them in the following 20 years. Their story really gripped me, and it's their tale. Lincoln himself almost doesn't figure into the book. It's just these people got caught up in that. And even though in this trilogy of political novels, I have dealt much more with the central big figures, Nixon, Reagan, Bush, than I have in earlier books, the inclination to pay attention to what people are seeing out of the corner of their eye and the people who are on the fringes of things still remains very much a part of my perspective.
It sounds like that might be an important thing for us to be reminded of at this time.
The precinct that I work in, historical fiction, these blends of history and fiction, which I always caution people to remember, they remain fiction, not history, because the novelist uses his prerogatives and changes things here and there. But I think that one of the things that this kind of book that I write can do beyond history, because people will sometimes say, well, what's the point of this historical fiction? Why don't you just write good narrative, satisfying history? Well, I think there are things you can do in novels that you can't do in history. You can speculate. You can dramatize things. You can take a leap. With history, you can't do that unless you have evidence for it. In other words, the biographer will have to say about Nixon, you know, well, it is not implausible to think that he might have at this moment thought. You know, it's a speculation and it's full of the subjunctive clause, whereas the novelist just goes ahead and has him think it. And so I think you can dramatize things that, in a way that a historian can't. And so long as the books are read with caution, so long as the reader realizes I'm not reading history, I'm reading fiction which is trying to get me to speculate about history, but is not insisting that this was the way that things actually happened, I think those books can be helpful. And the other thing I think that maybe historical fiction can do is by giving you this intimate, private view of people, by suggesting what a private conversation between, say, President Bush and Mrs. Bush might have sounded like, by trying to suggest what people's private motivations have been, their personal concerns may have been, it does make history a little bit more intimate. And I think maybe, this may be wishful thinking on my part, but I think maybe it helps lower the temperature of people's strident reactions to those politicians that they don't agree with on the issues. For instance, I've had a number of people say to me, you know, when I read your Watergate book, I was surprised that I had moments of real sympathy for Nixon. I saw him really hurting in the book, or I understood a little more why he overreached and why he crossed the line and did certain things he shouldn't have. And they'll say the same things to me about Reagan, as he's depicted in the book. And so I think maybe I'd like to claim for historical fiction at this really tormented point in the country's life, I'd like to maybe claim that it can help you look at some of these political figures as people, not just as politicians that you may be vehemently opposed to, but to see them as human beings that you can have a certain kind of sympathy toward, that you can relate to in one way or another. And that might actually be useful during this time when we're really all at one another's throats.
Dr. Thomas Malin, a novelist and essayist and award winner who has written 10 books of fiction, including the forthcoming Landfall, a novel on the George W. Bush administration. The author will give his first public reading from Landfall during a program that will be followed by a conversation about his prolific career as a keen observer of the nation's capital and America's political and literary culture with moderator Brian F. Carso, Jr., Associate Professor of History and Government at Misericordia, as the University Honors Program and the Soika Fund for the Humanities at Misericordia sponsor the free public event, A Novelist's Washington, Thomas Malin on Politics and the Novel, tomorrow evening at 7 in the Mary Kintz Bevavino Library on the campus in Dallas, Pennsylvania, just outside Wilkes-Barre. Again, it's a free program with Thomas Malin, and it's in the Mary Kintz Bevavino Library on the Misericordia University campus in Dallas, just outside Wilkes-Barre. For more information on the web, misericordia.edu, misericordia.edu.